Hello, humans, and welcome to Audioface. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Dan. I'm Dan.
It's amazing. It always happens once.
I'm Dan.
He's done this. I'm Sean.
Everybody
pays their dues. Because I was thinking, I was like, in my mind, the best, worst part of that, I was like, wow. I'm speaking fluent English for once in my life. I'm not even reading this. I'm staring at it. Just straight hits. I'm Richard Hammond's EV just upside down and on fire. I'm the alarm clock that keeps going. Anyways, this is episode 146. We're rolling.
An irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. Back fresh off of a 1 week holiday with...
That actually did help a lot.
Completely no music news whatsoever happening. No, there's actually quite a bit.
There's some gubs there.
We got some Zwischenfehler, as we'll say in there.
I love it. We have three albums that we're going to review. We have The Album by Teyana Taylor. We have The Ungodly Hour by Chloe X Hull.
Chloe and Halle.
Yeah. And Translation by Black Eyed Peas.
Minus Fergie.
Fergie's gonna budget. And we got some singles and stuff, and
And in fact, speaking of, we have some notable singles that were released over our break.
You're right.
Notably from J. Cole and No Name, they got into a bit of a thing. We'll be discussing that in the
Rap Beef segment,
which we'll be bringing back. But when we are getting into singles, we'll start with one single that got kind of a lot of attention was The Bigger Picture by Lil Baby. Mm-hmm. What's actually happening right now is that a lot of artists, Anderson .Paak as well, mm-hmm. a number are releasing songs in response to what's happening with the George Floyd protests. A lot of them had music cooking anyways because... they were in quarantine and they were working on music.
And some people were already making music in general too.
Yeah. So it was already kind of cooking in there and available. But Lil Baby released one that was pretty interesting. I would say it's good for him because it's kind of uncharacteristically, to keep it real, kind of coherent. And B, it has like a coherent message all the way through it. And he's even sort of acknowledging that I'll be honest, most of my songs are about like rapping and like doing dope and stuff, but like this is real like shit.
I can't lie, like I don't rap about killing and dope, but I'm telling my youngest to vote. I deal what I did because I didn't have no choice and no hope. I was forced to just jump in and go. This bullshit is all that we know, but it's time for a change. Got time to be serious, no time for no gang. Ain't taking no more, let us go for them chains. God bless they soul, every one of them names. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere. Might as well go ahead and start here. We done had a hell of a year. I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. They training officers to kill us, then shooting protesters with these rubber bullets. They regular people, I know that they feel us. These scars too deep, they heal us. What happened to COVID? Nobody remember, it ain't making sense. I'm just here to vent. It happened to one of your people, it's different. We get it, the system is wicked.
It's weird to see something. It's literally just like so out of character to see someone from Quality Control sound like a J. Cole rapper.
That's what I was like, oh, God, listen, Lil Baby, okay, put it on. I go, oh, that's actually not terrible.
Yeah.
Which is surprising.
Not great.
Not great. It's 3.6, it's 3.6, but it's not great, not horrifying.
Yeah.
So it's not boat skirt, so.
Yeah, it's nice to see, it's always good to see artists kind of talk and speak to the moment with their emotions and their feelings that they're having. If we reviewed every single one of these songs that were out there and existed, this would be a really long podcast.
Yeah.
But we'll always make time on this podcast for Song Machine, Gorillaz.
This guy. Granted, it is being spaced out by a few months now, which I actually like a little bit more than the first two that came out like one after another, per se. So Friday the 13th by Gorillaz featuring Octavian is Song Machine number 4. You know that we can be immortal. Out of all of the Song Machines that have been released so far from Gorillaz, I didn't really like this one per se. I don't know if it was just the flow of it. I might need to listen to it a few more times maybe to get into it, but I did not like Octavian's part in it per se.
Yeah, it's a slower song. It feels almost like a callback to Phase 1 Gorillaz where it's very heavy. The verse there, I mean, like, it seemed good. It had like some good moments, but it was nothing like particularly amazing. Like the guest feature on Momentary Bliss with Slow Thigh was pretty like characteristic, even if you liked it or hated it. Desolée was kind of like a knockout of the park, and with Skepta was pretty good too. This is definitely like one of the muted ones. And yeah, a lot of Gorillaz fans are like, of all of them, it's not like I hate this. We're not like, we're not reverting back.
No.
Like, this isn't like we're it's making humans kind of worse again.
But. No, it's just like forgettable in a way compared to, because I think the other three were so damn good that like eventually you're going to get a step down a little bit, but it's not to say it's bad.
Yeah. The other three-ish, there's also that one, I mentioned the Skepta one, it was because they released the Skepta and Tony Allen song, and Tony Allen's passing, but that technically doesn't count as a Song Machine episode. So there's technically been the five songs.
Yeah, because the one with Peter Hook is fucking ridiculously good.
Yeah.
I love that song. And then moving on to Signed by Roosevelt, and Jesus Christ, what a good song that is.
Audio Face old heads will remember Roosevelt and how much we like him on the podcast.
This is, so, yeah, especially old heads. Like if they know my taste, Young Romance, which was his second album, which we reviewed. We didn't have the podcast when his debut self-titled album came out. I definitely like his self-titled a lot more than I like Young Romance. And this is more of a callback to that original Roosevelt sound, but blending it a little bit with some of the Young Romance as well. One of my favorite themes he's had come out since Teardrops.
Yeah.
So, fantastic.
It was a really solid track. It's not too exploratory or breaking new paths
for
Roosevelt.
It's definitely his sound, for sure.
And I would wish that, you know, this is, I'm going to let it slide. It's a single, may appear on a larger EP, may appear on a larger album, but like, I do want Roosevelt to kind of branch out a little bit from his structure.
Yeah,
sure.
Because like his early work in like 2013, the Elliot EP, that's super dancey and everything. It's more or less like DJ skills, and then his two album LP releases were more like groove funky.
Pop instrumentationally driven.
It's
a very good type of sound. It's a very good thing he's done, but like you can only do that a certain number of times before it gets stale.
And 6ix9ine, Nicki Minaj, she had a song called Trolls, but you should know that we're not going to fucking review that.
Of course not.
Because I would rather keep some brain cells.
Yeah, absolutely. my remaining three brain cells will not be wasted on such a mess. Make sure you subscribe to Audio Face. We have a political report brewing. I just feel it's going to happen at some point.
Probably.
Very soon. It's just that the time is right. We are looking forward to a Haim release coming soon.
Yes.
And it's going to be light the next couple of weeks, but we have a couple of things planned Audio Face-wise.
I wouldn't mind doing like a catch-up episode too of some music we missed.
We do have
that. Because there's a couple albums that I like, especially Yuvia's Tomb, where I definitely want to full review that album, because every time I listen to it more and more, I'm like, this is like up there, my favorite albums.
We can work on that.
For sure.
Anyways, make sure you're subscribed to Audio Face so you get all of that. shall we? Lead us on.
Rap beef, nigga!
Punk ass move.
Jerry Tweet.
Nigga, do something. Stomp him in the nuts.
Rap beef, let's go.
Rap beef.
So, if y'all listen to Audio Face like you should do, that's how you should get all your music news. Don't go to NME, don't go to anything else, just go to Audio Face. If you listen to episode 144, at the beginning of June,
I'm so proud.
We talked about No Name's original, like her call out and thing with her piece.
She's basically saying in response to the George Floyd protest that there are a lot of top selling rappers who are being unquestionably silent about it.
We called out a few too on here. We're like, all right, Jay-Z, what you doing? Like all these people who, especially when they're high up and whatnot, they've come from the gutter or whatever, they've gone up to now where they're usually a little bit higher up, but they were always saying in their songs, oh, I've come from this, blah, 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 always be there.
And rags to riches stories.
Rags to riches, exactly. Yeah. Like, where are you now when there's so many other artists that are staying and doing, living their politics, as we like to say.
Yeah, like, where are the donations, where are the, like, speaking out? And we talked about Jay-Z and we talked about little was happening there. No names were mentioned by No Name originally.
Yes.
But one of the names that was definitely speculated about was J. Cole.
Almost J. Cole, a little bitch, J. Cole.
Yeah, J. Cole, to be fair.
To be fair.
To be fair. Was at a BLM protest in like around Fayetteville, where he is, you know, based.
Yep.
And you know, he was attending there, but a lot of artists were kind of just like out there and showing and protesting. Artists, as with anyone else, just going out to a protest is like literally like step one or step like 0.5. There's all the work that goes into doing
that. You can be Halsey and get shot by the police. Yeah, freedom fighter out there.
Yeah, that's
just like, I got rubber bullet scars. Yeah. Where's your mark?
It's not necessarily the goal, but like it's definitely props for that. But anyways,
for sure.
There's a little bit of silence after that, a little bit of not much going on. And then J. Cole releases his sort of response to everything that's going on, a song called Snow on the Bluff.
Like you was average, there's a young lady out there, she way smarter than me. I scrolled through her timeline in these wild times and I started to read. She mad at these crackers, she mad at these capitalists, mad at these murder police. She mad at my niggas, she mad at our ignorance, she wear her heart on the sleeve. She mad at the celebrities, low key I be thinking she talking about me. Now I ain't no dummy to think I'm above criticism, so when I see something that's valid, I listen, but shit, it's something about the queen's tone that's bothering me. She strike me as somebody blessed enough to grow up in conscious environment with parents that know about the struggle for liberation. And in turn they provide her with a perspective and awareness of the system and a fairness that afflicts them and the clearest understanding of what we gotta do to get free. And the frustration that feels the worst seems to come from the fact that most people don't see. Just cause you woke and I'm not, that shit ain't no reason to talk like you better than me. How you gonna leave when you attacking the very same niggas that really do need the shit that you saying? Instead of conveying you holier, come help us get her to speed. Shit is a reason.
And that like song's really interesting. It's mostly kind of this is actually kind of like the weakest. This is kind of like a slap fight rap beef.
Yeah.
Because nothing's really that harsh.
Like no kids are being revealed. Nothing's wild. No one's getting shot.
Yeah, like this isn't like I'm the ghetto Oprah rap beef from Pusha T Drake. Like nothing serious like that. But it's still very important to the context here. Anyways, yeah. In J. Cole's verse, he's being very sort of like, you know, I'm not the smartest, but as I'm hearing about all these things happening and trying to take in these voices, I noticed this one woman who's, I'm really paraphrasing the lyrics,
yes.
But like, I noticed this one woman on the timeline, she's like, young, probably comes from a privileged background where her parents already fought the fight, but she's speaking very out and forcefully, and basically J. Cole's insinuating that she doesn't like her forceful tone when trying to educate people about these things, which, policing a black woman on their tone is an interesting choice for a black man to make, or really anyone, because it's like constantly done when you really wouldn't do that same thing to anyone else. It's just like this sort of thing that's happening. So No Name, again, was not mentioned by name in J. Cole's song, but there's a lot of speculation about like, oh, is it about No Name? It seems to be about No Name. J. Cole was originally silent, but then basically like kind of confirmed
it. He's like,
it.
Oh yeah, it is about No Name and oops.
Yeah, so he mentioned that it was like this kind of thing that he had did. And Sean, you compared it actually to what he did with SoundCloud rappers.
Yeah,
where he was saying
the
like,
same thing he did with Lil Peep, especially where
Pump.
Sorry, Lil Peep, Lil Pump, who freaking SoundCloud rappers, stop making your names all the same.
Where he did it, Lil Peep.
Right? Where on his album ATM, he had a couple songs where they were KOD, where he's going on about SoundCloud rappers, and then he sat down with Lil Pump and he's like, oh, this guy actually has some decent ideas or something. We go, have you listened to his music? No, he doesn't.
Yeah, J. Cole has this history of making a strong statement and then going...
And then taking six steps back.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a difference between, like, you know, a lot of artists, like we just talked about 6ix9ine and Nicki Minaj, like we didn't talk about them because they particularly seek attention by being trolls.
Exactly.
And
hence the fucking title of the song.
Yeah. And that's a really good way to get attention for your music or get attention for your causes. And so, like, to like make a really strong statement just to get attention, but then not back that statement up, it seems like it's sort of like laziness of the craft, because you're supposed to be this really
good
rapper.
And there's no substance there at that point, and it's just very lazy in my opinion.
If you're saying like anarchy everywhere, but like hang on, first of all, we need to like obey the laws, then like it's just like
exactly.
Almost two different messages.
Yeah.
For example. So it needs to make more sense there. Anyways, No Name responds
with Song 33,
produced by Madlib,
and it goes fucking hard.
So for specs wise, Snow on the Bluff was like this really sort of airy J. Cole,
yes.
You know, like 4 minute long
typical
poetry
J.
Verse,
typical J.
Very
Cole.
Typical J. Cole.
Well, it's just not bad, but like you know, you don't expect anything other than that from him.
No Name comes with a 63-second
like
machine gun.
I dream all black. I seen everything. Immortalized and tweets all caps. They say they found her dead. One girl missing, another one go missing. One girl missing another, but niggas in the back quiet as a church mouse. Basement studio when duty calls to get the verse out. I guess the ego hurt now. It's time to go to work. Wow, look at him go. He really doubts to write about me when the world is in smokes. When it's people in trees. When George was begging for his mother saying he couldn't breathe. You thought to write about me? One girl missing, another one go missing. One girl missing, another one. Yo, but little did I know all my reading would be about there is trans women being murdered, and this is all he can offer, and this is all y'all receive.
It's like full gas in it. First off, Madlib is ridiculously good, dude. Madlib as a producer is just insane.
Yeah. It's just a hit machine over there.
Seriously.
First verse in the song, I saw a demon on my shoulder, it's looking like patriarchy.
That's the opening line, I go.
That's where you know, like, J. Cole got punched in the stomach. It's just like
damn, he's got, like, you know in GTA when you just, like, kick him about, like, six times in his ass and he falls down on his knees? That's yeah. What happens.
And, like, all jokes aside, the main idea that No Name was getting in the song and wanted to draw attention to were kind of two things. A, why, with everything going on, No Name draws attention to the black women who have also been the victims of violence recently. With everything going on and everything in the movement, why is the most important thing for J. Cole to focus on No Name's opinions about what people should do? Or, like, No Name's opinions about what's important?
It's like
right
the time when the Republican tax bill went off and Tucker Carlson was talking about trees.
Right, like, instead of the blowback from everything that everyone was obviously talking about, it's like, oh, let me focus on
look
this.
Oh, look at the puppy.
The cows are farting, but AOC wants to get rid of the planes. It's just like this totally, like, left field kind of shit. But, like, it's... That actually happened.
I know, but it did. That's why I'm laughing.
And the second thing is that, yeah, you're drawing attention to this. And, yeah, J. Cole, why? What are you, again, what are you doing? Why are you drawing your attention to this? This should be beneath you, but,
And you're supposed to be like, this conscious pathetic rapper and stuff as well. Self-proclaimed conscious rapper.
And yeah. A couple more good lines from this, which I'll basically just repeat to almost the last half of the song. But distracting from the convo with organizers, they talk about abolishing the police and this the new world order. We democratize in Amazon, we burn down borders, this the new vanguard, I'm the new vanguard.
Goes hard.
So, with that, really fast, her main focuses are kind of like the things that J. Cole was like, oh wow, you're talking really aggressively about these things, are not necessarily that aggressive. It's again, like, bringing attention to not just like the black people who are murdered by police, but like the black trans people who were murdered, the black women who were murdered, just like everyone in the community was facing a lot of violence disproportionately. She also talks a lot about prison abolition. She even says that, like, she doesn't want cops to go to jail for killings because she believes in prison abolition as a, like, replacement, as what you replace it is reformative justice. So you're actually helping people fix whatever criminality brought them there in the first place, as opposed to just, like, casting them away and just, like, having them hide in a hole where they usually don't get better. So I just really feel strongly about that, and that's kind of why she drew attention to these things. No Name later tweeted that she kind of feels bad. She's saying she's not
This was, like, this morning, too.
Yeah,
she tweeted this.
Just this morning, right before we went live to record this podcast. She said she's not proud for responding with Song 33. She tried to use it as a moment to draw attention to the issues, but it was mostly about her ego. She's keeping it up because she's going to donate half the proceeds to various mutual aid funds, and also Madlib killed the beat.
she did. I said that too.
Like, literally. So I think at this point, before we move on out of this segment, we need to handle some Audio Face Award related nominations.
Yes.
So first of all, J. Cole. This is textbook noted little bitch.
100%. He's a repeat offender.
He's a repeat offender. That does not.
This is his third time getting nominated.
Getting completely run over by a school bus as far as, like, rapping goes. You lost a rap beef, so that's a pretty strong contender there. And he just did a repeat of, it's the J. Cole special. It's,
yes.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry for the thing I just said. Oh, I made a hot take. Oh, no, I'm going to take it back.
Exactly.
No Name, I really wish she kind of stood her ground and was is why I said made my point. But the song speaks for itself. It's still up there. It definitely spoke for itself. No Name continues to speak for herself on Twitter, through her book club initiatives, through all the different things she does. Again, I really wish she would have stuck down harder, but I still want to nominate her for the Vince Staples Woke Award because we've mentioned her a lot of times for it anyways. It's a really good song, and her cause is still always very on point. So
definitely, I'll allow it.
Coming out of this, the Rap Beef Poetry Slam Invitational, it looks like No Name is the clear winner.
Pumping blocks into your dead body.
But not even funny. All right. Shall we move on?
Yeah, so we have our first album review today called The Album by Teyana Taylor. It is 23 songs, an hour and 17 minutes long. It's definitely long. Feels like it. But it's good, and it's interesting because my big takeaway from this album is the features that are on this album morphed into a sound that I didn't think that they could, whatever they were capable of doing, per se. So it's like the first song is with Come Back to Me. It's, or you have Intro, which is just a little prelude thing. It has a little background stuff going on.
It's kind of intense. Like, it's like a live birth, a 911
call. Yeah, but to say, it's because I remember at the end, it's a straight up a 911 call. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. And then Come Back to Me is featuring Junie and Rick Ross. And it's that R&B sound that I do enjoy. I like it, but I didn't think that the features on this album, when I looked at it, just going through it, I'm like, okay, this is going to be interesting to see. Missy Elliott in Future, you've got Kalani, you have Quavo, what the hell? Like, what are you going to do with these features when you have a sound like that? You have Miss Lauryn Hill at the end as well. But they all contributed to the album and did enough to have their own little input in it, but not enough to detract from the songs.
The balance we really
it
look
for. It was very, very well balanced, which surprised me. But I think this, to me, that shows just how good of an artist Teyana Taylor is. Because if you have honed down your craft that much, you have somebody on because maybe you like their sound, you want their input, but you keep an album to be completely coherent for an hour and 17 minutes with, I mean, there's a little bit of features, but the features have very specific sounds to them.
Yeah.
And does it that well. It's very, very well done in that regard.
The album is kind of like half features, half not. And like a lot of pop R&B
Black
albums.
Black Eyed Peas 2 actually is the same thing. This one we'll review in a little bit too.
Yeah. It's really like feature heavy at the top.
Yes. And then by the middle or the end, then it goes into usually like the last song or last two songs, which sometimes have features, and the rest will be just the main artist. And that's been a big trend. In this year, especially in the past about 2 years, and you've seen it today in at least two albums. I don't remember if Hour is that way. I know Black Eyed Peas for sure.
Yeah. These are three different beasts in all of them. But continuing on music wise, unless you have anything to say about Wake Up Love specifically, I was going to go into like low key and Let's Build
Wake Up Love is. It's good, but it's to me the first two songs are decent enough to get into it. Where I started to get into a little more is Low Key. I thought it was a very, very good track. Don't know what I'm gonna do now, do. I'm trying to keep my cool now. But boy, I'm wanting you now, you. Featuring
Erykah
Badu. Yeah, I have terrible names.
I'm just gonna handhold you for the rest of the episode on this
because I can't. Yo, audio face viewer ones know I can't pronounce my own goddamn name because I call myself Dan for Christ's sake. So
I literally have introduced myself as Sean. It's all.
Oh yeah, well, no, but, I just make fun of myself. Anyways,
I am eking to talk about the singles here and the features specifically because I did not know that like R&B Quavo could be this like tasteful
it's
and
fucking
doable.
Good.
It's fine. It's fine.
Let's build. It's astonishing because I'm like, God damn it, it's gonna be a song with Quavo. I'm like, no, I'm starting to like this album. She has a really good sound. Don't fuck it up. Goes on it and it's coherent. It's good. Even his part, I can understand what he's saying.
Real, your loyalty to me, babe, worth a meal. Forever trust is what I'm trying to build.
Yeah.
And it like goes well with, you can tell it's Quavo for sure, but it's enough in it to where it stays a Teyana Taylor song into like her, into the whole theme of the album as well.
It's less
and the lyrics are good too.
It's less the usual like Quavo flourishes back of here, where it's like every verse is like a backing part. Like it's the Migos, they're back all over again. It's more just like, yeah, they're almost duetting or backspitting this like back and forth verse thing. Works really well. You go through the rest of the... One thing I will focus on is Morning with Kalani.
I did not like it.
Yeah, there's this something, I'm still not sure exactly how to put it, but there are certain R&B albums that I feel like can sometimes drone into an almost form of monotony, where they're fine. It's pleasant monotony, but it just like doesn't really bring anything inspiring to me. It doesn't sound like any one song is different from the next. And in this album, the songs with features were all really good, but the songs that were kind of solo, a lot of them were like, take it or leave it, and then when the album's an hour and 17, you're really wondering, what could have been left?
And the Kalani feature is definitely, out of all the features on this album, it's the one that is, it just falls down short to me for it. Because I don't know if it's something with Kalani's sound or something with it, because we had the same issue with her album earlier this year, where it just, I wouldn't say it doesn't sound genuine, but it doesn't sound inspired.
It just sort of sounds...
It drones on, and it, like, with her message and everything, when you listen to the lyrics, I'm like, okay, this is a very over-sexualized song in a way that it didn't need to be in that regard for what, like, the point of a going across was, but it's okay. It's not terrible.
Yeah, I just felt because that, like, Kalani has done better work before, and this continues, like, a not as good as her old work streak.
Exactly. And then you have the song right after that, Boomin' with Missy Elliott and Future, and it's actually quite good.
Really good, yeah.
I even like Future's part in it too, which surprised me. I mean, it's a very typical Future in it, but it's good again because I wonder how much input Teyana Taylor has into her songs with her features, because it's very coherent and it's,
her producers.
Because I haven't heard that many albums that have this many star fucks in it that it's cohesive, but it's
good. It actually works together. I was pleased by it. As we're going through it, yeah, like once you get past Boomin', you're kind of into the part of the album where that's mostly just her.
Yep.
And there's good parts of it. I think Lose Each Other is a
it's a good song.
Very like high point out of it.
We don't have to lose each other. I'm the only one that knows you. What am I supposed to do if I can't hit you when I need you? Just cause I can't get love don't mean I wanna leave you. We don't have to lose each other. You can still text me sometime.
I can still there's a it's R&B is a very tried and true, like sort of form topic wise of what it is. It's kind of just the journey.
We've had a lot out this year already.
But I think there are good and bad. Not necessarily like good and bad, but like there are really exemplary examples of R&B touching on these topics where it feels and sounds really good and special and like its own thing. And then where it feels and sounds like, okay, this is R&B that you can kind of just put on and play in the background. It's not offensive. It's not bad per se, but it doesn't really, it's not like eye popping or eye catching. It's not necessarily something that bring you out. At least Teyana Taylor is really consistent. And even when it's not the most entertaining or inspired, as you say, it's not bad.
It's a good album. I do like it. I think it is very, very long for an R&B album. I don't like R&B albums to be much more than 40, 45 minutes tops, because it's a sound, as we said right there, it can get monotonous, but if it's a good monotony, I don't want it to be longer than that per se, because then after that, you just kind of zone out in the regard, especially by the end of the album, and you can miss some very good points and very good tracks by the end of the album, because you just Once it's so saturated within it, you can tune out, I guess, per se. But again, I give her a lot of credit for the album. I like it. I do genuinely like it. Again, I just think it's a little long.
Yeah.
Too many notes.
Especially like you said at the end, We Got Love with Miss Lauryn Hill is a really phenomenal song.
Very good
ending track.
We
reviewed it as a single earlier this
year.
Yes,
we did.
It's really great to end it, but yeah, it should have... The middle part of this album near the end should have just been like contracted a little bit. Keep the songs, release them as an EP, but don't lose... Speaking to artists, don't lose sight of the beauty of an album, which is that you're taking the essence of an idea and bring it down to one thing.
Yes.
So, arbitrary scale this week is crowd sizes in response to our president's ability to get absolutely bodied by TikTokers and K-poppers, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit. But the larger the crowd size is, the better. Bonus points if they actually show up.
Yes. This is, let's say... like a weekend NFL game.
Okay,
like a solid crowd. Like let's say a Green Bay Packers versus Denver Broncos. So like,
okay,
it's a solid game. You
middle of the season.
Like middle of the season. Like it'll probably be sold out, but there might be like 3,000 people that get stranded in the snow in Green Bay and like can't go there.
Tailgaters.
Yeah, so they just end up being in the parking lot, but you still got like a very good crowd size, like 40,000-50,000 plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people show up. Yeah. Good hot dogs.
Good hot dogs, lots of beer thrown, and you know,
fun for America. Fun for the whole family.
Yes. All right, so Beyonce, she launched a Black Parade initiative to support Black-owned businesses. It's quoted, it celebrates you, your voice, and your joy, and will benefit Black-owned small businesses.
Yeah, it coincided with the release of a single called Black Parade. It was on Juneteenth, the weekend, and she's just trying to like make a... sort of an online resource to find Black-owned businesses for like in arts and design, beauty, fashion, lifestyle, restaurants, all these different things.
Those are good little stories to pop it up.
Yeah.
And get sense in it. I like it.
You get music from Beyonce, you get a directory for how to support Black-owned businesses, all super cool. This is a really interesting kind of like, oh, they tried case. So there's a country music group called Lady Antebellum. We reviewed one of their albums before. They're a pretty decently known country
they're
group.
They're good.
Yeah, very well known. Very pretty good. Again, don't like country that much, but pretty good.
But we reviewed that.
They've won Grammys for whatever that's worth. And they decided that, you know, given everything that's going on, and given the fact that Antebellum is basically a word for the pre-civil... I'm forgetting the term, but like pre-Emancipation Proclamation sort of era, before in the South, just like the 1830s and 40s.
Okay.
That's like, it's considered the antebellum period in history.
Yes.
So they're like, okay, we can understand this can be a bit of a problem, so we're just going to change our name to Lady A, which is better. It's you're keeping your name, it's not too different, but you're shortening it to show respect for the fact that...
Which is fine.
The antebellum period is not a great time for... And it got not a great memory for everyone in the country. Fine, except there's a Lady A already, has been for 20 years, a black blues singer.
Oops.
She is, her name regularly is Anita White, and she's been performing as Lady A since the 1980s. She's currently 61. She also has an album coming out on July 18th, Lady A Live in New Orleans, for the record. I guess she says it's an opportunity for them to pretend they're not racist or pretend this means something to them. If they did know, they would have done some research. I'm not happy about that. You could found me on Spotify easily. Why couldn't they? Referring to the interviewer. That's definitely like a good point.
They just didn't think, as it looks like, as a representative for the band said that the decision was made in ignorance, and they plan to contact the original Lady A sometime soon about it, so probably didn't think about it or anything. They just rash decision, oh, we should probably change Antebellum because, you know, reasons. And so, oh, let's change Lady A, but then didn't think of the how many artists out there and whatnot. That's a pretty easy name to have, I guess.
Yeah. And just to show, even these examples, there was like the Black Squares thing that was happening. There was all these people who like mean well,
the
end up like...
Or how about the OCs? OCS.
The people who mean well, but ultimately end up kind of messing with the ultimate cause they're trying to put forward. Can be a bit of a problem, but such is life. Anyways, next album we've got here is The Ungodly Hour by Chloe and Halle. It is 13 songs long, 37 minutes. A much more pleasurable time period for me as an album listening experience.
And I like it a lot.
I like this a lot. This is contrasting R&B that feels really fresh.
And very, fresh, genuine, and just good overall.
Yeah, thoughtfully produced. A lot like the Teyana Taylor album. Yes, only that the production's this fantastic. Time it's just like...
The songs are shorter too as well. They're like 2.5 to 3 minutes long, maybe, where a lot of Teyana Taylor songs are maybe 3 to 4 compared.
Yeah. And you got a variety of different production work on here. Mm-hmm. The title track is produced by Disclosure. There's a song, one of the lead singles,
By Disclosure, because I was wondering why. I'm like, The Ungodly Hour, I'm like, that's a really fucking good song. I'm like, it kind of sounds like Disclosure in a way, but I wonder if they produced it.
They did.
That makes sense, because it's very good.
Catch Up, the lead single featuring Mike Will Made It's production and Shui Lee, hashtag Free Slim Jimmy.
Stay Jimmy.
Still nowhere to be found.
Oops. Where is he at? Who knows?
Next, Raish From Her Terror is just like Raish is just like Shui Lee with a sock puppet. Sock puppet one hand, sock glass of water on the other.
Oops.
this is intro is really short. Forgive Me kind of really gets you into the idea of the album. It's going to be kind of light and whimsical, but very bassy and deep and very funky. Not too like future inspired, like techno, as we've seen a lot of things in 2020 come out, that's very much bled into R&B. But it still feels very fresh, feels tightly produced. It feels very well, like crisply produced.
It's super, because...
In a good way.
Do It right after Baby Girl, the fourth track is fantastic. The drum in it kind of almost sounded like Stormzy's drums in a way, but not like piercing your ears per se, but it has that kind of different sound within the drum beat, but makes that into an R&B song, which I haven't heard before, and I really, really like that track a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different production in this as well. Obviously, the one on Ungodly Hour too, which is probably my second favorite track on that album. Tipsy was one that I didn't had the stupid snap thing going on in the background, which I despise.
It's a particular thing you don't like.
It's just it's my new trap snare, but I had it in the background. But once all of the production wrapped around it, it wasn't bad. It was just the opening maybe 30 seconds where it was very prominent compared to when like halfway through the song, then all the other production went around and it was fantastic from there. Their vocals are amazing.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
They harmonize really well together.
Yes. The lyrics are quite enticing, too, for the entire album.
Yes.
It's good. I really like it. There's only just the... there's just the one feature with Mike Will made it.
That's the one, like, linked feature. But I think there are a couple other artists who, sing and do backing vocals here and there.
You can hear it.
I don't have it all in front of me right now. But, yeah, that's a really good thing is that this is another album where all of the vocalists... Less so with Teyana Taylor because it had more features and definitely the vocalists came from trap and were very auto-tuned. But these you have really genuinely good singers who sing and they harmonize so well that along with some good production, I imagine that there's some like voice, editing and smoothing just as you would do and when you're mixing and mastering like a studio album. But you're kind of just using the effects of the voices to go to their full potential as opposed to using a bunch of auto-tune and using a bunch mm-hmm. of effects to kind of make some sound, like, sound something like it really isn't. Their voices are just good enough to where it works already.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Lonely's very good.
Yes. I liked it, like, so the thing with it being shorter too is it got to the point per se of the album, and every song linked well, so where by the end of it you weren't overwhelmed by, I wouldn't say the monotony of it, but just the sound of R&B like you had with Teyana Taylor's album. But this one, it was just, when it wrapped up everything that needed to be done, and it was just the right amount of length for this album. It didn't need any more, it didn't need any less. It was exactly where it needed to be to be a very good album.
Yeah, none of its themes felt like too overdone. Again, like, it's the tried and true R&B themes of love and etc.
All that,
but
yes.
Again, like, at only 40 minutes, it's not overwhelming, it's not too much. It's very digestible in a sitting, and there's enough in it production-wise and quality-wise that you will come back to it. You'll add it to playlists, potentially, sure. Like our playlist that we
have. I definitely did for Do It. I put that in my playlist. I know.
Yes.
That.
I'm good to review it, give an arbitrary scale rating.
Go ahead.
Crowd sizes, of course, comparing it to Donald Trump's failure. I'm going to give this a Hollywood Bowl, back when we could have concerts, mm-hmm. on like a Thursday evening.
Okay, solid. So depending on who's there, it may get sold out. Other days, it may not get sold out.
Yes. But these are up and coming artists. They're like, they've been at this for years. I think they were like doing YouTube videos since they were 13, 12.
That's wild.
Now they're like 18, 19, 20, around that age. So great. Good trajectory thing. Going for them.
This
should
is,
be very
this
good.
Is, what is this? What is this? What is this? This is an EDM festival in like 2010, 2011.
How big? Are we talking like, Ultra or... just getting out of the shadows again, EDC.
Yeah, like EDC 20. Let's go with EDC 2012. Like 2012.
Okay.
So it's like, because it's like a couple years after all the shit that happened down in 2009 like that we don't talk about.
Like EDC 2007 so is a little like, different.
There's like four people show up. I'm the only one there, Dead Mouse fan. Woo!
Oh,
but it's like that where you're starting to get crowds of like 10, 20K plus around that number, but not like where it's completely seas of humans just yet.
Yeah, but getting there.
Getting there, for sure.
You're stuffing a club.
Yeah.
Like a really large club. Anyways.
So this is a story that I fucking love.
Long time ago.
Oh my God. So Grammys are going to rename the urban categories after eligibility for best, alter the eligibility for best new artist nominees. So
they're going to alter them.
Yeah,
so they're doing a bunch of changes. One of them is like getting rid of
the urban,
the word urban from most of their awards. Most.
Oh, not all of them. Oh.
They're still going to use urban to describe the best Latin pop or urban album, which is like just kind of like double doing it, right? So it's like gotta be best Latin pop or
urban. It's like that's so broad. Jesus Christ!
Like we're not
like how many J Balvins do you want in that category?
Yeah, like we're not that better. But honestly, if we called the Flugeldorf Award and we just ran with it, then like y'all would just deal with it. It's like these are the best Flugeldorfs this year. It's just gonna like whatever. Like just give it a name. Give it a name and don't make it have like some sort of racial connotation to it. I think something that's also happening is that there's now going to, other recording academies requiring voting members to fill out a disclosure form so they can talk about any conflicts of interest before they start voting, because that's been kind of an issue
before. An issue for fucking
the
ever.
The whole kind of time, really.
And that's why we have our own awards, because we're 1,000 times better than the Grammys.
Shout out to Tyler, the Creator.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah. He called out earlier this year, I believe, saying
he's
that it's just a politically correct
before
way
the
to
Grammys.
Say the N-word. Yeah.
And 100% true. Yeah. It is, because remember when we went up and we did our awards last year, like, and the urban category. Well, you should probably change that name.
Really,
that's
not
pretty
do that.
Fucking bad.
Yeah.
Thank you. Finally. And now we're moving on to our last album. We have Translation by the Black Eyed Peas.
Bap.
It's 15 songs, 56 minutes long, and it's very, very different than stuff that they've done. Well, I wouldn't say that, actually. It's good. I do enjoy it.
Yeah. So, like,
the Black Eyed Peas have been forever.
History.
There's a little history of Black Eyed Peas.
They've been around since 1998.
Yeah, they've been together.
They kind of started as, like, an alternative, like, kind of weird thing.
Yeah, and then experimental-ish. And then they went into that, like, in the early...
to, like...
That hip-hop group.
Major pop, hip-hop dance, like...
Mm-hmm, in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And where everybody's heard Black Eyed Peas on. You had probably their best album, which was in 2009, the one with the alien face on it. What the hell was that called?
The End, Energy Never Dies.
The End, yeah. That one is definitely a very, very good album.
End and Beginning.
And the Beginning, together. Oh, that's
those
right.
Those are really good, like,
I forgot
side
about The Beginning. Yeah, that came out 2010. That's the last...
That's peak BEP to me.
Yeah. That's the last one I really dove into, because I know they had one out in 2015. That was because I only had, like, a couple Fergie songs. Like, Fergie was only in it a little bit, but I know she didn't tour with them at all. Because I remember seeing Black Eyed Peas in 2017. They did, like, a head thing for the Champions League final. I'm like, why is there only three of them?
Yeah, Fergie is...
she gone.
Previous member of Black Eyed Peas has not officially left the group, but hasn't really made anything.
And there's been
with
plenty
them.
Of different people who've come in and out of it, for it.
The other thing about this album, so, like, the Black Eyed Peas kind of sense what I think is their... What we just kind of talked about was their peak in 2010s. Have just kind of done these different musical experiments with, like, making different albums kind of described by different things, or inspired by different things, different projects. So right here, they kind of took, like, a hard pivot to the cash cow money pit that is Latin music.
Holy hell, yes. I mean, the first song, Ritmo, Bad Boys for Life, which that was released in 2019, I like to say, and it's been played everywhere because it's featuring J Balvin.
No son ni Reebok ni Sonai, nah. Sin estilista luzco fly. Yes. La Rosalía me dice que luzco guay. No te lo niego porque yo sé lo que hay. Lo que se ve no se pregunta. Nah. Soy tostero y tengo claro que es mi culpa.
Mi culpa, culpa.
Como Canelo en el ring nadie me asusta. Vivo en mi oasis y la paz no me la
and
tumba.
You can, you've heard that song in a club somewhere, definitely.
I remember.
Yeah, right. You've definitely heard it in commercials, whatever. That song is very, very popular. It's a good... Whoa, got hiccups. It's a good opening for this album because it sets the theme, like, okay. I remember when that single was released, I'm like, interesting, they went into straight Latin, and I wonder if they're going to mix some Afro beats in there and stuff as well, and they did do that, which I'll get to in a little bit. So the first, like, half of the, or like the first three quarters of the album, almost all of them have some type of feature in it, and then the last four songs, it's just the Black Eyed Peas. So again, going into that where... It's a trend we've seen in 2020 where a big named artist or group has a lot of features in the beginning and at the end, then it's them. And it's hit and miss depending on the group and the style of music and stuff as well. Because some of them have been fantastic, some of them have been really shit. And this one, I think, is actually quite good. It can be... The problem with Latin music is it can get you up here for a while and you just stay there for a while.
Constantly up-tempo.
Yeah, super up-tempo all the time. But some of it... is good and inspired. Like, there's a couple tracks in here where they have, like, Vida Loca, No Mañana. Those ones have a little bit more of electronic music influence into it. Then you have, like, Celebrate, Todo Bueno.
Todo Bueno.
That one has, like, really those has, yeah. Those ones have Afro beats in them. Afrobeat influences, and they're fucking great. I really liked hearing the production of it. The production is incredibly crisp for the entire album throughout. And most of the songs are in Spanish, which is fun. But it's interesting to have their little parts into it where they'll go back and forth in English. It's just hilarious hearing Will.i.am say no mames. I'm like, okay. at one point.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
They're just two really weird samples, or I guess like uses in here that I'm just like, so Vida Loca kind of has like a Can't Touch This Hammer Time bass line in the background. And okay, then yeah. Get Loose that. Now, near the end, yes. Only near the end, samples that It Takes Two to Make the Thing Go Right.
Yes.
And I know Will I Am basically is like the Fed and just has like unlimited money. But like, it seems like the two weirdest places to waste what must have been like a lot of royalties.
Shit ton of royalties.
Because it's like barely used for these small parts of the song. And it's, again, Black Eyed Peas are really good at like chopping up beats and mixing them. You don't get like a lot of like creativity and groundbreakingness with their music. It's sort of like the major laserfication of a lot of bands where like they get to a certain point, they grow, they've done all their stuff. It's usually like their dance groups. Mm-hmm. And then they decide, where's the money? Latin music. I think maybe Dylan, not Dylan Francis. I think actually, yes, Dylan Francis. But there are like a number
Dylan
of
Dylan Francis has done some stuff with Latin music and he's, his music is just not good, but
yeah. this was at least good. You're inviting a lot of like, and again, this is also pop. So it's like,
it's pop, very pop-ified Latin. Pop Latin with a little bit of Afro beats and some electronic music influences. Yeah. That's basically the theme of this album. It holds true to it throughout. All of the features actually are fantastic on it. Shakira with Girl Like Me is very good. You had
Becky G with Dura Heart, I really love.
Yes. Nicki Jam and Tyga on Vida Loca were very good too, which was surprising, even though fuck Tyga.
It's my life, bitch. It's my life, bitch. Vida loca y no es la de Ricky. Con una canción y me busco el pique. Dinero, estamos pa' eso. Pues tírame el pique, yo rompo el verso. Esto lo hicimos pa' romper la discoteca. Aquí no hay miedo, lo dejamos en la gaveta. Es mi vida loca. Es mi vida loca.
Check out Tyga. He's been on a couple of
things,
features that haven't been terrible. Yeah.
Not scared.
God. Anyways.
Never forget.
Yeah. I will say this. The last song, News Today, is such a letdown.
I know.
So it's literally everything we talk about in Audio Face, where there's a way to talk about issues going on in the world and there's a way not to. Yeah. The way you don't is go ahead and talk about
is it. News Today. Just.
Or like, what about it specifically? Because I know what I would say about it.
Well, for me, it's just, it feels like the, God damn it, what's it? It feels like Lana Del Rey style of just woning and droning on about something that you don't quite understand. And it's just,
it's kind of just
boring
like,
as fuck.
It's like not really ruminating on what's happening below service level. It's like, it's literally saying, I'm watching TV and these are my reactions and these are my responses. It's not really going deeper into...
into what will actually either fix it if you really want to or into like the deeper meanings of what is going on just in shit in general.
For a separate project going through Kendrick Lamar's discography and there's a song Untitled 3 from Untitled Unmastered where he's kind of speaking in a bunch of different positions and he kind of does that in order to kind of speak from the perspective of different groups that are kind of facing discrimination or facing like hurt. And so like that is one I think a group example that comes to mind of how you can describe people's sadness and pain with like coronavirus and protests and stuff. But like instead of just saying like these are my reactions from the ivory tower as I watch CNN, it's more like how do I put myself in the position if I can of any of these people who are suffering and like how do I bring a voice to what they're feeling through music. And it's just what really kind of missed that opportunity, especially with like a Latin album. Like you could have brought literally any one of these artists on to say anything. There's a lot going on in the
Latin
world.
America, holy fuck, shit's going off there.
Can make three albums off of that.
Yeah.
Would be really hard.
The other thing too is the production of that one. It just, because everything else was at such a high beat, you would have wanted it to either like slow down a little bit earlier before that one or have a little bit break or something. But then just to like kind of come to a screeching halt of it, and either you don't need that song and you can end on action or you just completely change it to redo the lyric or just redo that song as an ending track, and I think that would have wrapped up the album 1,000 times better because overall before that I thought this album, well I still think this album is actually pretty good. It's nothing spectacular, but for them and for a pop thing that's just going to be like hits after hits after hits,
yeah,
it's good in that regard.
Yeah.
So keep the super cash train on Latin though.
Arbitrary scale crowd sizes.
This is like a Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, which was the stupidest name in sports. It's like a game on like a Wednesday at like 4 p.m. when, you know, there's like a couple thousand people in the stands per se. You'll still get the game. It'll be more people on telly, you know, yeah, than it is an actual game. But, you know, it's kind of whatever.
Yeah, most people leave at like the sixth inning.
Oh, 100%, because it's the Angels versus the San Diego Padres. And you know the Padres suck fucking ass, dude.
Yeah, it's like 7:30 p.m. You're looking, it's like, you know, I think the Lanes are starting to play on the
fire. Yeah, it's like you go to the game, you get like $20 tickets because you're like, you got out of work early, you work at a packing district in Anaheim, and you're like, I gotta take the 22 home. It's gonna be rough. 22 to 5. I really don't wanna do that drive. You go like 7:45, you go on Google Maps, you're like, 30 minutes to home? Alright, I can leave.
Exactly. Quick hits, audio face, where I always like to end on a fun note. And we've been alluding this whole time to the ranking system, which is crowd sizes, because it's really the only thing Donald Trump really cares about. I messed up the link again. But I have it here. They sabotaged...
K-pop fans.
K-pop fans, along with people on TikTok and a bunch of other like fandom groups, reserved tickets for Trump's big rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma that was supposed to happen. It was originally scheduled to be on Juneteenth, but that would have been too on the nose. He ended up getting moved to Saturday, the day after, and there's a lot of historical stuff with the Tulsa race riots and stuff. There's here nor there. But yeah, they reserved all these tickets to... tell the Trump campaign, oh, 800,000 people are going to show up. We have this outside overflow space so we can have this big, this is the first rally since Trump has returned, since the inauguration, but like, because he's been doing rallies as president, whenever he wants to get hard. But like, it's the only thing that works anymore. But, because launching wars in the Middle East apparently doesn't.
I guess that was only cool for like 18 years. You know, after like the 18th year, like, all right, it's kind of getting old.
But yeah, like Trump's campaign manager tweeted out that he's expecting 800,000 people to show up. And before, like, you know, it's bad when with their live streaming using the tightest shots possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good because there's still a pandemic going on and most of the people there weren't wearing masks.
So naturally, because the president is like, it's a democratic hoax, but we'll get into that later.
You know, because as we know, coronavirus only infects liberal cucks.
Yes.
It's literally...
liberal cucks and minorities.
I'm not even going to say the names that people are giving the virus because it's really bad. But
I know. It's just hilarious to see all these fandoms come out and say, you know what, fuck this, fuck all this shit. We're gonna do things for once, which is awesome.
They did what like the resistance libs have tried for 3 years. Like, oh, if we tweet this picture of Trump and Putin kissing, it'll piss him off. It's like this.
That's not a way to piss him off. You gotta go to his ego, and his ego, crowd sizes. That's a big one. And the K-pop fans, they fucking know.
Okay, it's again. Like, K-pop.
Keep it up.
We're really loving what's coming. Keep it going.
Next thing you know, BTS announces Leninist album.
we can. I think that'll be interesting when they tour in China. This has been Audio Face. What does it mean to play us out?
So, thank you for listening to Audio Face. It's been episode 146. Please make sure to subscribe to us and rate us, 5 stars, hopefully, on your podcast app, especially Apple Music. That's the one that has a lot of good metrics and stuff. Spotify is getting out there more because, you know, Joe Rogan got that sweet, sweet fucking money deal.
Hashtag cancel Joe Rogan. Hashtag cancel Joey Diaz.
No, Joe Diaz. That's my boy.
Long week on the internet. It's been a long week.
Anyways, go follow us at Audio Face Pod on all of our socials on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram if you dare. You can follow Dan from at Dan from the internet on Instagram and Dan from the web on Twitter. Go to our YouTube page, audioface.youtube.
YouTube.audioface.show.
I always mix that one up because Dan is uploading way more clips into there, and you can talk talk shit as a lot of people did on the Strokes album review. So please come more. I want to hear it.
Come on, this is
hilarious.
We'll be back with more music next week. Until next time, cheers.
Bye.
You can start.
Dude, she's so much better than Jay-Z. Holy shit. Dead ass, dude. She goes hard.
Like, she just repeatedly cucks her own husband.
Seriously. Like, her whole Ivy Park line, too, it just goes so much harder than anything that Jay-Z fucking does. It's just hilarious.
Jay-Z is just,
you know,
like,
who wears the pants in that relationship, big time.
You know who wears the entire outfit?
Like, oh, dude, she's, like, dressed from head to toe when he's over there in skivvies.
No. fucking Jay-Z's the fucking purse poodle.
Hanging out like this.
Peeking out, afraid when buses make the hissing noise.
Yeah, and just...